behind the colors that you fly. Love just one nation. God bless the people now who cannot raise their voice. We can chase down all our enemies, bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa.
And good morning. You're welcome to Scrambled Eggs, and this is Melody. I have a program, Truth Quest, on Tuesday evenings from 8 to 10 p.m., but I'm filling in for Jane Carpenter this morning, and we're going to scramble a few eggs this morning and maybe even ruffle a few feathers, who knows, but the views expressed on this program are those of myself and my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHIN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And I also want to state that this program and all my other programs are archived at www.gimmesometruth.info. And so, Rebecca, I brought you on this morning, got you up a little bit early because you were out there in the Pacific Northwest. And this is early for me, too, but I want people to get an idea of what you're about and who you are. And so would you like to tell the audience?
All right. The standard thing that I say is a whole systems activist artist who literally and figuratively wears many hats and is presently based in Seattle. You would want me to say a bit more. So I'm a very practical person and action-oriented. And I'm sure Melody will vouch for that. She's known me for a couple of years now and watched seen my work. But I also have a strong spiritual base, and I emphasize spiritual rather than religious. And years ago, when I was in my late teens, I opened my door one night. This is a true story. And I found a member of a esoteric Christian religious order standing there after I had been dealt with by six male teachers in my junior high school who gave me special instruction and told me that I was going to do something very special for the planet, which is pretty unusual in junior high school, particularly for male teachers. I opened my door one night, and this member of this esoteric Christian order, independent esoteric Christian order, was there, and he began instructing me. And within several months, I ended up in Chicago under one of their master teachers or bishops, and then the co-director of the order, female, it was a couple that, you know, founded the order and directed it, she came to visit, and she liked me. So I ended up in San Francisco for 3 years studying directly under them, and then I was sent out on mission, and I've been on mission pretty much for the rest of, throughout my life since then. And we were told that what is now happening on the planet, we were told this 40 years ago. So I've been aware of all this. I didn't have the details, but I knew that what is presently happening was going to happen. And I've been doing spiritual work. Many of my efforts have been directed towards this for many years. And as Melody can attest, I tend to be very broad-based. I'm a Renaissance woman, and so I have gone in many, many different directions to try to bring the light to the planet, which is essentially what is happening right now.
Okay,
that has been possible for many centuries.
Okay, now, one of the areas that I became acquainted with you was around the arena of the vaccinations and what was going on with this flu vaccination that was taking place a couple of years ago, although I was familiar with you earlier, but this seems to be, this is where we kind of pretty much connected, because you were working pretty heavily into trying to get the information about, you know, the aspects behind the mass vaccinations and these flu. And would you like to explain that a little bit more?
Yes. True to form, just before you essentially connected with me and others connected with me on that, and this, and there's kind of an irony here, which I'll explain in a second. It's an anniversary. I had been working with Rosalind Peterson, who you've had on your show with me and Deborah Dupre back in November, and I think you've had her on before.
Right.
I'd been working with her on the nuclear weapons, or I'm sorry, the military weapons testing here in the Pacific Northwest that had been announced in early winter, like February of 2009. And that's where I had been putting my efforts to, there'd been other things, but as usual, but where I'd been putting my efforts is getting people aware of that. And then all of a sudden, I was on a public access television program, and I was the special reporter, and I had done special reports on many different things, including the military weapons testing. And then I happened to pick, somebody sent me an email. A lot of people send me things because they know that I'm broadly based, and it was from naturalnews.org, where Barbara, I'm forgetting her last name now, similar to Minter, but that's not her last name. But anyway, she had written Dr. Barbara Minton had written a piece on Jane Burgermeister and how she had filed criminal charges against the World Health Organization and the United States government concerning, and Baxter, concerning the release of viruses on a Swiss train and also ferrets that had all died and it looked like a deliberate pandemic being spread. And on July 1st, which is today, 2 years ago, I got on the internet and I attempted to find Jane Burgermeister. And before the evening was out, I did. I found an angry letter from her, which is true to form for Jane, threatening to file criminal charges against somebody who had said that that she her work was being supported by the late Michael Jackson, who was killed because he was going to donate large amounts of proceeds from his concert tour to her and her work trying to stop the...
Now this part is new to me. And,
oh, you didn't know that?
No, but... I realize that this is a sad part about even... It doesn't matter, it seems like, what avenue we seem to get into when we're trying to be active or non-active, and I think a lot of times it chases out... a lot of the good people is when they start having what you're just talking about here was these, you know, they start this bickering back and forth, and unfortunately there's a lot of egos and things that take place. But where I wanted to go with this is the fact that you got active in the vaccine disclosure of what was going on behind that, right?
Well, yeah. What I'm saying is that's how I met her, because she was threatening to sue whoever had planted that disinformation story, and then I got a hold of her and I told her who did it, and then she was very pleased about this, and then she said, you know, she asked me about myself, just as you asked me to say, and she said, "Wow, it looks like we can work together." And I actually worked with her on her second set of criminal charges, and it went from there, because we did have a similar ability to write, and particularly in the legal field, even though we're not lawyers, we're legal theorists. And we, for about 2 months, we worked together very peacefully, and then all hell broke loose. But the important thing was, 2 years ago on this date, July 1st, that's when I got involved with the vaccine truth movement through the series of events that I just mentioned.
Right.
So it's interesting.
Right.
It's 2 years to the day.
And so what were you doing with this vaccine movement as far as, what were you trying to disclose that was taking place?
The general story is that the World Health Organization, I think even more basic to this, because I think basic to everything, of course, is the New World Order. There had been a series of, and this was also in Jane's criminal charges as well as my federal case, the U.S. government had quietly signed a number of treaties under Bush, and most of these were in like 2005 and 2006, that in the event of the World Health Organization declaring a level 6, highest level pandemic, that the entire United States government would be subsumed, and this included the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, all of our core documents would be subsumed under the direction of the World Health Organization to deal with this supposed pandemic, and we would come under what I coined the term, but it's an accurate one, medical martial law, which could include forced vaccinations, and in this case, forced H1N1 vaccinations, and also in Jane's criminal charges, as well as my case, Campbell versus the United States, there was all kinds of evidence that these vaccines were toxic. There were all kinds of evidence about it, the fact that there was possibly squalene in some of the variants on it, the fact that that one company, and that looked really suspicious, one government contractor had been given the entire contract to make all of the syringes for the vaccinations, and there was evidence that they had put RFID chips in it. It's called VeriChip. And their stock, Verichip stock, went up the day after the FDA approved the H1N1 as a vaccination. And this was just before Kathleen Sebelius then declared a national emergency, or I'm sorry, Obama declared a national emergency on October 23rd, 2009, which intuitively, again, you can see where my intuition, spiritual abilities, and practical abilities intersect very, very closely, because I had gotten inner guidance to file my federal case on October 23rd, and it turned out Obama did the national pandemic flu declaration on the very day that I filed my federal case. So you can see that, like, when you listen to your inner guidance, it's not just, you know, pie in the sky or nebulous or effluvious or something. You're actually getting very practical guidance. And in my case, time and time again, this sort of thing has happened, these sorts of synchronicities. So this case was filed, Campbell versus the United States, or Campbell versus Sebelius, and it was the longest lived of all the flu cases. Jane's was investigated briefly, her charges, she didn't actually file a lawsuit. Hers was investigated by the city state prosecutor, and this was probably as a result of the charges she and I wrote together, and I did the research for it to back it up. And then that prosecutor was mysteriously fired within several months of beginning that investigation. So that seemingly went nowhere, although it went out worldwide. So it wasn't a failure at all. It alerted, you know, millions of people to the danger of what was really going to go on if it weren't stopped. And mine was an actual lawsuit, which is far more difficult to do, particularly a federal lawsuit. And I did not get any help whatsoever. At least only one lawyer, a 9/11 lawyer for truth, or lawyer for 9/11 truth, helped me behind the scenes. But other than that, I had a legal team that was a couple of paralegals, you know, or former paralegals, a legal researcher and myself, and this one lawyer who was coaching behind the scenes, and that was it. I wrote to all kinds of, public interest law firms, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., I'm going to name some names here, have just written a really excellent article that had appeared on Salon.com and Global Research, which are highly respected sites, particularly Global Research, on the Simpsonwood transcripts, which is a smoking gun primary source federal government document that proved that there was a conspiracy between the U.S. government public health agencies, the World Health Organization, and the pharmaceutical industry to hide the fact that vaccines are morbid, create morbidity and lethality.
Okay, now one of the things that, you know, that I've noticed, and I mean, this is just a side issue around it, but it's a very prominent issue, is that this is, those of us that do bother to get in and start researching some of the things taking place in our world, of course, they throw out that, you know, conspiracy theorists and whatever, which is a mechanism used to kill the argument. But but ultimately, time and time and time again, we run into this aspect of things getting buried and or drug out in such a manner that that the real information is not given its due, and that these people end up being suppressed in one form or fashion. And sadly, again, I mean, these vaccinations are proving to be a questionable thing from the beginning, and that there was an agenda behind them, and there are people that are doing the research now to even show that those that were creating them had some beginnings that made you wonder why they went in the directions that they did. But
it's kind of like disclosure, like we were discussing earlier. I mean, there's all this evidence around, but it's not being looked at, and it's not in the mainstream media.
Right.
Like, for example,
Let's finish the vaccine thing before we get in that direction.
Well, this is vaccine.
Oh, okay.
It just deals with it.
Okay.
I was over at a party, again, July, something about July, a year later, and this was a party to raise funds for an African missionary who was visiting. And so it was a very pleasant gathering, and I decided, which is uncharacteristic of me, as you know, Mel, to keep a low profile. I decided I would just go there and be mellow, which is really unusual. So I just sat there because some of these people were upper class. You know, Bainbridge Island is very wealthy, and I didn't particularly want, and I really like my friends over there. It's a doctor and a former nurse, and they're fairly wealthy, and these other people are fairly wealthy. So I didn't know where they were coming from, so I thought it might, and seeing as I tend to be more, quote, radical, as you know, I'd better just keep quiet and just enjoy the day and just see where they're coming from and deal with them where they're coming from. And so I let that happen. But it turned out that several of the people were vaccine activists, and one of them was a prominent wife of a prominent vaccine activist that you may have heard of, who lives over there. They're neighbors of my friends. And another woman whose husband, a psychiatrist, had committed suicide from being on one of the well-known psychiatric drugs. So I had their health truth activists who were there, so we had a lively discussion. And then this blonde woman who had come in and out of the discussion and had been talking to my partner, John, she comes across the room finally, and she joins the discussion. And I had mentioned that I had this book of evidence that I was going to give to my friends, who were, as I mentioned, were medically, you know, medical professionals, which had the evidence, part of the evidence that I was going to, that I had amassed for my case. Mm-hmm. If it had a court. And this included the Simpsonwood transcript and several other key documents like that. And this woman said, I would really appreciate it, Rebecca, if you would give me that that evidence book that you were going to give to your friends, because here's the reason. She said, I will read your case because I've read cases before. I want the whole case. If you'll get that to me, and any other evidence you think would be relevant, I would be extremely interested in taking a look at this. And she handed me her card just as I was leaving, and I saw why she might be interested. This woman was the Northwest Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times.
Uh-huh.
And I said, wow, okay. So I had to do something, and I couldn't get it to her immediately, but about a week later, 10 days later, I did assemble a packet for her, got it to her P.O. box for transport on the ferry, because apparently they have ferries, because it's an island where she's living. And then it's been almost a year now, and I've never heard one thing from this woman.
Well, see, that's part of the reason why, you know, you are doing what you're doing and why I'm doing what I'm doing is, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes it isn't that, you know, that the information is always accurate, although we try to do everything we can to make sure we get that out there. But if we don't start asking the questions to start getting these people that do have the credentials or the documentation or putting it out there in the media, then it gets buried. And so many of us behind the scenes are out there trying to pass the information along and bringing it up into the media and internet. Doesn't matter, you know, what avenue we're doing it, we're trying to get the conversation changed so that we're not just listening to Michael Jackson or Beyonce or some ridiculous headline that is just drones on and on day after day from station to station that is irrelevant. And even though yeah, there's things that aren't, that we have to discuss out there that is going on that isn't always pleasant. But if it's not in the conversation and not in the media, then people aren't hearing about it.
That's, I totally agree, and I'm really grateful that you've had me on your show a number of times, and you've shown me the support, because the case, as I was doing it, and it was really, really difficult to do with no legal help, or scarcely any, and except for, you know, my team and this one lawyer, and having to go up against the U.S. attorneys alone. And there were deadlines, and I was under a lot of pressure, and then I wasn't getting the help. I was actually being attacked by other activists, which is what you were saying before. I mean, this bizarre socially inculcated mind control and of dysfunctional behavior of ego and this sort of thing, rather than helping each other, attacking somebody who's on your side and doing something, or ignoring them and refusing to post the story. So even though the case didn't get the support it should have, with the sort of thing I just told you about, the, you know, the newspaper woman I met and this sort of thing, mainstream and
right, but we still, that message got out worldwide. And
it did.
And really did start making a difference, even though there's still people out there getting their regular flu shot and things that they need to be asking questions of what's in those flu shots, where they came from, and what they're really about. Not just a, you know, a pat answer, because if they start looking at the contents in these things, they might start wondering why that's in there. And
but the frustration sometimes is, though, you get people who they're activists, but they're one-issue activists, and they don't want to look at the bigger picture. And in my opinion, in this, I guess this is one of the main points we can make today on this show, we need to start looking at the bigger picture.
Right, right.
And we're not going to get anywhere. And in my case, and Jane's, her criminal charges in my lawsuit were unique insofar, or, well, maybe there's a few others, like April Gallup's case, her 9/11 case. That was another one that tended to be broader based. But anyway, most of the cases deal with narrow gauge legal theory about one, you know, technical point or something, and it's based on statutory law. And that's why the lawyers, I found out later, they ridiculed my case. And they said it was no good because it was based on this narrow statutory law. Well, if I'd done that, I wouldn't have gotten anywhere to get it to the court of public opinion. And also, somebody needed to do a case on constitutional law because there's massive violations of our human rights in what they're doing. And you're not going to get that case arguing how many angels danced on the head of a pin. You've got to actually, you know, instead of being technical, it has to be constitutional and ethical, which is what I did. And I'm a writer and poet, and I'm very proud of what I wrote. I can write better than most lawyers. Plus, I am a legal theorist. So, actually, the case, I'm proud of it. I think it's better than the vast majority of the cases of case law that I've read. And it's certainly more interesting because it tells a very compelling universal story that most people need to be aware of at this point.
Yeah, but there are those of us that have been looking into the whole legal system out there. There's so much problems going on out there that, you know, we still have to keep, you know, working within whatever the systems are going at this point, as long as there's some functionality to it. But
well,
it's starting
hybrid.
Hybrids.
Like the idea here is use the corrupt court system, but use it to get it on the public record, and then as much as you can, publicize the hell out of it. And that's what that was my strategy with that case. And in general, I would have done a better job publicizing it myself, not relying on anybody, but my hands were kind of tied on that. I had to rely on some of the other activists on that because I was so occupied trying to meet deadlines and write this stuff by the deadlines for the case. And it was so grueling that for 8 months, I was really occupied with that. So I didn't do as good a job as I normally do publicizing things. I just, you know, and I didn't get the help I should have had with the alternative media. Mm-hmm. And we've got to do something about that and get out of this ego thing.
Okay, let me do something before I forget again. But this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida. And I've got Rebecca Campbell on the program this morning on Scrambled Eggs, and this is Melody Hallett filling in for Jane Carpenter. And we are trying to scramble a few, and And I mean, we got another direction or two that we want to head with this. But one of the other issues that, you know, I'd had you on had to do with the Gulf situation. And I was wondering if you had anything to kind of add to that, since, you know, it's been going on well over a year now.
I'm in touch with a lot of the activists and down there, and some of the most reputable and effective, and several of them are healthcare providers. The U.S. there have been efforts to contact the EPA and Vice President Joseph Biden, and Biden did not answer directly. He answered through, was it the CDC? I believe it was the CDC. And there were these really well put questions, very well written, legitimate questions about how the supposed quote cleanup was proceeding, considering the fact that the Corexit mixed with the petroleum distillate was 10 times more toxic than it would have been by itself, and it's mega toxic by itself. And the fact that this is still being sprayed, there were actual questions: are you trying to create a depopulation zone to grab the land and kill a whole lot of the people? I mean, I'm really glad that they're starting to ask about the depopulation agenda, like I was in my vaccine case. They're actually, these people are very aware. They're spiritually aware people. I would say they're more along our wavelength, Melody, in whole systems, practical whole systems orientation. And it's interesting that Biden refused to answer it. He had the CDC answer it. And the CDC is one of the four agencies that I sued in my federal vaccinations case, because they're liars. And
they seem to be representing the other side.
Exactly. Well, they do, the dark side. And I saw the letter, and it's full of lies. The use of this is, it's on the public record that the people of the Gulf had representatives approach and the federal government, and consistently, you know, they have nothing to show for it. And in the criminal charges that I'm writing right now, then these are the big ones. This might be, if I can do it, the biggest legal action in history, in recorded history. And it's charges against the New World Order / Illuminati in the United States of America.
So, but you're saying, when you're saying biggest, you're meaning the most encompassing because of the...
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Because of the range of topics discussed. It might end up that way, but at the moment it's not because of the number of litigants. It's because of, you know, the range of subject in the particular thing. This is an example of, and I've had, as a legal theorist, I've had to invent some terms to get people's minds around what's going on. And one of the terms I invented, and I looked all over the legal, you know, canon to find out if this idea existed, but I didn't see it. And so I came up with the term deliberate denial of remedy. Like when these New World Order types do these atrocities, and then the people attempt to do something really common sense to help themselves, and then there's a deliberate attempt by the government to shut down their ability to help themselves. This, getting this on the public record, and, you know, these letters to the CDC and Biden, then nothing happening, it gets on the public record and the court record that there is a deliberate denial of remedy. The people did approach them, and they were denied remedy. And if you get a pattern of this, of deliberate denial of remedy, say, concerning the Gulf, and I can show a whole range of things in the footnotes that I'm going to put in my criminal charges, I can show multitudinous deliberate denials of remedy to the people of the Gulf. That includes, you and I had, and Deborah had, and Rosalind were having a discussion on it, where the people were not getting medical attention, and it was being denied them. The doctors were being threatened and this sort of thing to give the VOX tests and blood tests and that sort of thing. And then the people start using the only thing available to them, which is like natural health remedies, like detox, you know, herbal detox and clay baths and that sort of thing. And then in mid-October, the FDA starts issuing edicts to stop oral chelation and herbal detox and clay baths, which is a deliberate attempt to stop the people from being able to use the remedies that are available to them, and that shows criminal intent. So over and over again, if you get this deliberate denial of remedy, you get a pattern of criminal intent. And that's one of the ways that I believe in the next few years we're going to have international truth and reconciliation tribunals where all this is going to be brought out. And if we've got the records on this that show the deliberate denial of remedy, that's how we're going to prove. One of the main ways we're going to prove that there was criminal intent, besides getting the actual, you know, email documents and that sort of thing, which are hard to get a hold of, that show conspiracy to commit genocide and ecocide. This is how we're going to do it.
Now, one of the people that I had interviewed, I don't know if I did twice, but I know I at least did it once, but I think I did it twice, with Joan Vion. And she was one of the rare people in this, you know, globally, that was able to and figured out that there really was things going on over and above what most of us have been compartmentalized and thought to think, you know, in a narrowed manner, and not realize that there is a broader scope of things taking place. And she started attending, she'd attended well over 100 meetings around the world, and starting to connect the dots between the different organizations and those that have run this world were creating. And yes, they like to break it down to things even on a local level, but have control from the top. And I even found this in the areas of illegal behavior that they had that kind of control and brought it down on a local level, that they utilize a lot of the what would be termed criminal terrorist gangs and the like. And yet, when you talked to the investigators and the people that were involved, you were finding out that they were going through the same stonewalling that you're talking about, or burying of the evidence, or being flat being told, or they couldn't, you know, follow through, or you know, some of them didn't, you know, manage to even live, you know, or were harassed to unbelievable proportions. So this, trying to find good researchers and journalists that, you know, I mean, they have to have some means to be able to go about doing this, the research and work. They have to take it upon themselves, because there's not many media organizations that are going to support real journalism anymore. They're out there, but they're really few and far between. And then a lot of times, even those organizations will only work within certain parameters.
That's very true. Even the alternative media, so-called, like, for example, this is a really good one that stands out, and I think I've mentioned it before on two of the other shows I was on with you, but it bears mentioning again, because a lot of people put a lot of stock here, where they might reconsider, was when I was doing the stories, and I was doing the public access television stories on the naval weapons testing on the people of the coast of America, particularly the Pacific Northwest. Amy Goodman came to the Green Festival, and the Green Festival is one of the main ways we were getting the word out about this, because we were able to get to the environmentalists, who a lot of them are what I call yellow environmentalists, because they just want to do one issue, like, I want my little community garden, or I want a bicycle, or I want to recycle, and they're not looking at the whole more sinister pattern of why there's a problem in the first place on the planet. And so we have these little what I call slice sheets, you know, where you divide the sheets and then you have little links with some captions, and then people can just pull those little, you know, thin sheets. Mm-hmm. And then they've got the links, and they can look it up for themselves. And so that's what we did to cut down on money and maximize, you know, getting it out. And I kept putting it at different booths throughout the festival. And then my other strategy was, since Amy Goodman speaks there every year, I was going to walk right up to her with a letter and state briefly what was going on. And then I gave her the links to check it out and start doing some stories on this. And then I had also followed this through with a call to somebody at her headquarters and emails that had a bit more on it. as well as putting it directly into her hands. And I did definitely put it directly into her hands as she was signing books, so nobody can say, oh, you know, it never got to Amy Goodman, or her staff intercepted it, or the dog ate it, or, you know, whatever other excuses they might have. And I waited, and I waited, and Amy Goodman never did a story on this.
Okay,
despite the fact she's alternative news, and this is threatening the people of America.
Now, I had witnessed some stuff that took place over the 9/11 issue along that lines, but she's not the only one. That's why those of us in the fringes or other avenues of these media have to keep harping on it to the point where the major media players start talking about it. I've watched this time and time again with Alex Jones to the point where there's issues he will not touch on, who is huge in the alternative media and another avenue, but after a while people will start keep hounding him and hounding him, so finally if they start talking about it, so that's what the purpose of some of us are trying to do, is to get these people get this talked about so much that they can't avoid it anymore.
In general, I'm not a vengeful person, so I'm being half serious here. I think you'll enjoy this briefly. I had my revenge on Amy. She came later in the year. She generally comes twice a year or more. And the second time she came and was the anniversary of the battle in Seattle. This was in 2009. This was all this.
Over the WTO thing?
Yeah, the WTO battle in Seattle. So she was the leadoff speaker for the official celebration of the, at least by the activists, of the battle in Seattle. And she was at Town Hall, which is probably the most prestigious and most used place for major speakers in the city. So I had written a piece specifically for this, and I think you saw it because I sent it out beforehand, and it was called Hypocrisy Now.
You know that it's also one of our flagship programs.
Democracy Now?
No.
I didn't know that.
No, Democracy Now.
Yes, so. I know that. And I'm forgetting the it had Hypocrisy Now and then an open letter to Amy Goodman. And I stood, and it was a one-pager, so I stood out there passing this out, and I didn't say I represented anybody. I just said this pertains to tonight's program. And everybody took it. I didn't have scarcely any left the ones I took, because there's about 800 people that can get in there. So everybody took it. And then I sent it around, and it got a lot of, airplay apparently, to the point where Maria Heller actually invited me on her show to talk about that. She loved it, because she was fed up with, you know, she gets downgraded, and a lot of these people that are really, like you, like Maria, you know, are actually dealing with really, really difficult issues and the actual conspiracies going on, whereas Amy Goodman, you know, is grooving on good times and doing a little bit of that, but doing, you know, more, you know, fluff.
There's a point where people get so big that they build themselves into a box, as opposed to where they originally start out being the one stepping outside of the box. And sometimes that happens when people get to that certain level. I was just reading some information on the internet that I knew it happened, but I didn't know why it happened, where, you know, you had, you know, somebody like Alex Jones who has quite a following in certain arenas, and he, you know, you had Jeff Rintz, who had another large following, and they were both on the same network, and then all of a sudden Jeff isn't there anymore, and you realize that these two used to work together, and now they're not. And so instead of just, you know, allowing free speech, these, you know, they end up letting the egos or issues that shouldn't have been in the a problem, you know, become a problem. So this, again, in many of these issues crops up. I'm finding it in science. People that are questioning some of the aspects that took place around 9/11, they were you're allowed certain issues to talk about, and those that don't find other evidence to the contrary are not allowed to talk about it. And so they get, you know, shoved in the back burner or ridiculed. And one of the finest pieces of, you know, evidence, whether she's right or not, I don't know. But I'll tell you, she's Dr. Judy Wood has presented a really great expose in a book that she, you know, had produced to question things that took place around the tower event. So, but I do also know that I'm aware of a lot of personal issues that went on around this whole thing, but she's not the only one. I see it time and time again, and then you wonder how we ever get any science or information out there when you've got personal issues going on behind the scenes. So it does make for some interesting ways of trying to get things out. And one of the issues that you know, I promised that we would get on, because the Gulf issue is very important. People need to be keeping that in perspective and paying attention to it, because it hasn't gone away.
It's still as serious as it was. I just thought I'd give you that update. Also, one other thing, John Hutchison and Nancy Lazarian, who were doing the cleansing and apparently getting some results with their Tesla-based technology, are taking a break, and they're up in Minnesota right now. And I've been communicating with John, and he said they're probably going to go back, but they needed a break. Uh-huh. So they're up there right now, and they had left the Gulf. But I'm still actively working with others who are starting to bring this to the surface, and there's more movies being made about it. And I think, along with Fukushima and so forth, it's back more on the radar of most people who hopefully are starting to see the interconnections.
And it is through this you know, what you call broad-based systems, is that there really is a far-reaching agenda going on, and there are people out there documenting the heck out of it. And mm-hmm. But it's being able to get the information out there and connect one group to the other, and that's what many of us are trying to say, well, maybe if that has something to do with this and it has something to do with that, you know, maybe there is a tie-in, you know, and you start asking these questions. Again, you know, sometimes we go off in directions that, you know, we don't feel panned out, but you know what? If we don't ask the questions, it doesn't happen. So that, to me, I get constantly chided over the fact that, you know, if it's not documented or if I didn't, you know, have some something to back it up. And I do this to other people, other researchers. I want to see a little more evidence sometimes when I do hear their theory or projection, mm-hmm. So that, you know, when I do present it to the public, that I know it's being talked about in more than one arena. But that doesn't mean I won't talk about it if there's only one doing it. But one of the huge aspects that you have been purporting, and I have just in the last year or so really started looking at in more in depth, is this thing on disclosure. There's so many people out there with credible backgrounds, and I brought a few of them on my program in the evening about, you know, we keep talking about, you know, unidentified objects and whatever. Well, the problem is that there's plenty of them that have been identified, and there's more to it, and it isn't just some hokey pokey thing. There's some legitimate questions and legitimate documentation that has taken place. And one of them you got into that, you know, this is, I haven't done as much, I'm new to the research on it, but I'm starting to see some credible information on, is these missile silos that seem to be decommissioned. Do you want to explain that a little bit?
Yes, and there was an Allied issue here in the Pacific Northwest where they wanted to build an extra dock at the Bremerton Naval Weapons Facility, which is the nuclear submarines. And this thing overall, after it would have been done, would have cost $1 billion. And a number of us showed up, and this is maybe the best, one of the two or three best hearings I've ever been to in my life here in Seattle. And we let them have it. we really let them have it. I thought it was so outrageous that I used my satirical billionaire for Bush character, Price is Right, who went in and pretended she was a consultant and she was backing the idea and totally ridiculed it on camera. And all these other patient activists came up with really, really good arguments against it. But the biggest argument to me against building this is the nuclear missiles throughout the planet are at this point totally inoperative. And the evidence that you're talking about, that you were alluding to a moment ago, there's all kinds of evidence on it. And these people that want, like, ironclad evidence, like, what do they want? I mean, like, a lot of the evidence, like, if you've got 400 experts, like Stephen Greer has managed to corral, and in 2001 they actually did have a press conference of about 20 of them as samples of what evidence they have, and these 400 people, which includes the other ones of the press conference that you and I were talking about and you might have taken a look at or read about yesterday, was on September 27th of 2010 at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., and you've got people that are willing to have taped or written depositions. They're willing to go in front of a court of law or congressional investigations and swear on oath, which could lead to possible perjury charges. They're willing to put themselves in that position to testify. And in court, that is, if you have expert witnesses and if you have evidence that even if it's circumstantial, that will stand up in court. So I'm wondering what kind of evidence, and then you've got hundreds of thousands of YouTube videos, some of which may be photoshopped and faked, but not all of them. When you get that number of throughout the planet, all this photographic evidence coming in on it, and then you know that the governments have lied to us on all these other things, it's hard for me to believe that anybody could believe that there's not something going on.
Well, I've interviewed George Filer, and I had attended a conference last year that he was involved with Mutual UFO Network. And when I got to see, some of the credible evidence and the volumes that these people deal with and investigate, and people can get involved in this if they want. They've got, they've got training sessions, and if you want to be an investigator to these incidents, to help, document these things that are taking place, it isn't just, a figment of one person's imagination. There's volumes and volumes, and yes, there are plenty out there that aren't legitimate, but there's also enough of them out there that are worthy of checking into. And this one that I'm looking at right now is this a report that was done by a Captain Robert Salas, and he was got into this. He was documenting his experience with 18 nuclear warheads that were shut down. Mm-hmm. And then I was just watching a video after that was done undocumented on this disclosure tape that Dr. Stephen Greer had done, where and I didn't catch the guy's name before I left this morning, but he was documenting if I think that's the right one. I was looking at too many different things at once. But there was one video that was on that's on the net showing that there's an ICBM going up and being literally decommissioned in the air, and this was somebody that was commissioned by the military to document the footage, and then when he got it back to him a bit later, they could literally see something shooting at the warhead on the end of this missile, and it took off the warhead on it. Mm-hmm. So would you start looking at this, and it starts mounting up and mounting up. There's a point in time when you start saying, the evidence is there. There's less as evidence has come forward to prove that it isn't happening, as far as other than the usual scoffing and marginalizing the people that are involved.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree with you, and so it's to the point where I've been urged by people, don't mention this in your criminal charges, But the more I think about it and ponder it, the more I'm going to put it in. And I'm not going to make it like the exact centerpiece of the charges, which in the name of the criminal charges are nuclear war by other means, comprehensive civil/criminal charges against the New World Order/Illuminati in the United States of America. That's the full name of it. And to me, I analyze the 8 ways that the New World Order has been able to take over America and destroy it since its beginning. And it goes back, it's going to go back into history, starting with George Washington and his administration. And one of the first ways they do this is subversion. And then secrecy is another one. And one of the major things that has allowed what has been going on for the past, intensively, ever more intensively, for the past century, since the early 1900s, has been the suppression of new free energy/zero-point technology since the time of Tesla, when they shut him down, and then also the fact that of extraterrestrial appearances on the planet, which have everything to do with a lot of the weapons that the U.S. government has, which come from other sources. They're off-planet sources. And the fact we have deep underground military bases where a lot of this stuff's being engineered and then hidden. And the fact that they're hiding FOIA requests, like people say, well, you can't get any FOIA, gotten documents for this. You can't prove it. Well, that may be true, but I think you need to start questioning when the reason that you can't get the FOIA documents on this is because the U.S. government has given it to U.S. military contractors, and then corporations are the alleged corporate persons, quote-unquote, with the infinite rights above ours. And once it's given to one of the military contractors, then it's, quote, proprietary information, unquote, no longer subject to the FOIA.
Well, I had Larry Bryan on my program, and this guy spends his life doing FOIA requests, trying to connect a lot of these incidents that the disclosure people have been involved in, and again, you're not going to have, I haven't found anywhere that you do any investigation that you're going to find 100% truth. I mean, you have to really scrutinize scientific information. You can mess with statistics. You can do all kinds of things. So we have to take it upon ourselves to start questioning the information out there. And yeah, sometimes things just get repeated over and over and again, and it becomes truth. And that's when we have to start asking the questions and getting, keeping it in the forefront. If we're going to get some kind of real disclosure, which when I was at this last meeting last year, they asked everybody in the room that had been dealing with this from the beginning of the questioning, is if they were ever going to get disclosure. They all said they probably wouldn't, because it wasn't in the interest of the government and military to disclose. And so we as the public have to keep on them and bringing it out as we can and putting it out there, because somewhere along the line they're going to have to at least keep releasing bits and pieces of it there, just like they've done with 9/11. I mean, there's so much information out there on that, and it still hasn't been admitted to, and it won't.
Well, they will, because it's coming to the point where it's going to be taken out of their hands if they don't, and that's coming up really fast. So they have a choice. They can either do it themselves or, and I won't be specific here, somebody else is going to do it. And, we can talk more about that later. But people have asked me, don't say anything about this in the criminal charges or you'll lose credibility. I really don't care. I don't have any credentials. We talked about all these people trying to protect their credentials, and they don't want to put it on their news program because it will damage their credibility and standing in the internationally and so forth. I really don't care. So I'm willing to risk putting this in, because I think it's the linchpin of a whole lot of other, it explains a whole lot of other things, Mel. And so I'm going to have the courage to put it in there and show exactly how it fits in with the pattern of subversion, secrecy, terrorism, mind control, and all these 8 different ways that they've destroyed America. And I have evidence on everything I'm saying. I've got evidence. Some people may say it's circumstantial, such as what we've been, you know, talking about with the disclosure issue, but it would stand up if it were ever allowed to come to court, which it won't be under the corrupt court system that we have. Although there is a way that you could get possibly a grand jury investigation, and I have a strategy about how to do that, and if I can get it to 8 other people in each district, we might be able to get at least one grand jury investigation. But you're not going to get it from the corrupt judges and U.S. attorneys.
Well, and in that evidence situation, you know, that can, you know, I have to admit that, you know, there's things that you would like to bring out that I'm more open to doing that over and, you know, as I start accumulating more information so that I can corroborate it a little bit. But then there's, again, you know, I have to commend you for coming forth and being one of those people that are, you know, not afraid to say these things and start bringing it out in the public purview, because it really does need to be brought out. And even if you're right or wrong, somebody has to do it. You know,
and I don't feel I have anything to lose. I really don't care about all the credentials and honors and all this, because I think it's a dreck. I mean, from what I've seen, all these people that are publicized are generally phonies and sellouts. I mean, now it doesn't mean anything to be famous, because it usually means you're either a sellout or you're dysfunctional and can be used. even if you're not a conscious sellout, you're being used because you've got emotional problems and you're being used that way. And we've seen that in the activist movements with our celebrity activists. So I don't care, because I see these pitfalls, and I'm going to do what I'm called to do, and I no longer care if anybody supports it either. I've never asked for financial support. I've managed to do all this on virtually nothing, and I have some friends here who back my work and have provided me with what I need. I try to keep my needs as minimal as possible, but still I do have some financial needs, but they've been met. I mean, I find that if you step out there and you're doing in harmony with the Creator, and everything you do is a prayer for the illumination of the planet, which is how I function, your needs are met. You're protected. You're always provided for. You'll never be out on the street. You're probably never going to, you know, have huge amounts of money, but you're going to be protected and cared for and be allowed to do your mission.
Right,
and that's what I seek to do.
And so if you're seeking the truth, you're seeking the truth anywhere, and I've found that even documented things are highly questionable. I've gone to, you know, clerk files and court files and the like, and found that, you know, the information, even in your, I'm trying to think of where you file your
the clerk of court?
Say like for your plats and things like that. I found that, you know, there's a lot of information. It doesn't matter where it's filed. It can be incorrect. It can be purposely changed, altered, or something left out. And a lot of these courthouses have burnt down. And then I've heard about, I've gone to one library and had one librarian say, well, that, you know, that doesn't exist anymore because that burnt down. And then I went to the library next door and they said, oh, yeah, we got it. I mean, you just got to keep digging. If you're after truth, just keep digging and keep asking questions. And that's the kind of work that, you know, that you seem to be focused on, Rebecca. And if it's about disclosure, you know, hey, you know, it is time that, you know, we start speaking about it more and more and bringing forth the evidence. And if it means filing cases, that's fine too. But I want to thank you for coming on the program and enlightening our audience with, you know, some of the things that you're working on.
You're quite welcome. I've done it a number of times, and I'd be happy to do it again.
Okay, well, thanks again.
Thank you.